It's Ari Rosenbaum back with another episode of that 401k podcast, back by popular demand. Even if I'm the only person that wanted this to continue. But anyway, welcome to another episode. This week's episode, we're going to talk about my two cents on how a financial advisor can start or grow their 401k plan book of business. Next week, we're going to have Dan Venturi of Brightworks. He's a good friend of mine. Hopefully, he'll be a good part of the show in the near future. He's going to talk a little bit about what he does. And we'll talk about, a lot of the things that's going on in the industry, 316 work, payroll, as well as his thoughts about that 401k conference in Chicago, which we had. It was a great event. As much as I love the one in Citi Field, this one was a lot better because of the venue and the experience, but we'll talk about that with Dan next week. In terms of the news, the only thing I really want to touch upon this episode is Ohio Financial Services, Ohio National Financial. They are getting out of the 401k plan business. Unfortunately, that means that quite a few people, including a person that I know on LinkedIn, lost their jobs. Unfortunately, that has been the big crux of what's been going on in the industry ever since the fee disclosure regulations went into effect in 2012. A lot of the larger plan providers left the business, sold their books of business, realized that the 401k space, I really believe because of the fee disclosure regulations, have made it a more competitive environment. And when you have more competition, fees obviously get lower when you consider as a percentage of assets. Technology, of course, has helped further decrease fees. But of course, in my opinion, that increased competition has really hurt a lot of the larger plan providers, and they realize, it's too much work, not enough profit, let's get out of it. And, unfortunately, that's what we've been seeing in this business. We've seen a lot of consolidation. I know that if you look at the 401k Help Center the way that I do, every week there's a TPA that's bought out. There's a large TPA out there buying a lot of other TPAs, regional TPAs. They're either themselves priming up for a sale. My experience is that a lot of TPAs buy other TPAs with the hope of getting bought out because they become bigger fish, or a possibility that this large provider in question is readying itself for a IPO. So time will tell. So anyway, let me get back to the topic of this podcast for this week, how a financial advisor can start or grow their 401k plan book of business. As you know, when I started my own practice, a good part of my practice has been writing articles. I write a weekly article. I upload it on jdsuper.com. It's in a PDF format for everybody to distribute. And out of the 4 weeks that I write per month, one of the weeks is devoted to advice that I have for plan providers. My two cents, based on the experience that I've had, 20 years as an ERISA attorney, especially 9.5 years working as a TPA attorney, working for third-party administration firms, working with a lot of advisors. I've had this experience. I think it's a wonderful experience. And so every, once per month, I try to, impart some advice, experiences to help plan providers grow their business or even start their business. That's just been a very big part of my practice. And it started, when I was working at prestigious, semi-prestigious law firm in Long Island, when I realized that, the partners of the law firm didn't want me to talk to their clients for some reason or other. I think they when you have a law firm that's made up of formerly small law offices, the partners are very, very clingy to their client lists. Even if whatever business I brought, they'd get 50% of their, we get 50% of the fee, they still didn't want me to touch their clients. So I decided that the best way for me to stand out in the crowd was to write these articles. Of course, working in my own law firm, I don't have to deal with the bureaucracy. I could get these articles out. So again, like I said, these articles are, based on my experience and, based on what I've seen. And it's always been my interest in helping advisors out. I've been always helping advisors out. I've always been helping TPAs out ever since I started my own practice. You know, don't nickel and dime them for phone calls. And it's a great, opportunity to help people out. The retirement plan business, as my good friend Richard Lurita would always say, it's a relationship-driven business. You help people out, they're going to remember you. I came across an advisor in Chicago who signed up for the event, and a good guy. Talked to him a few years back. He had some questions, called me out of the blue, and I just gave him some advice on how he could stand out in the business through social media. And he took my advice. He has good content. I think it's helped his business because he was telling people, you know what? He says, I called Ari a few years back. He took time out of his busy schedule. He says at the time it was with my kids and getting them dinner or something. I don't really remember the call, but he remembered the fact that I took time out of my day to help him. Never got a dime for it. And I just helped him out. And, I think a good part of the business, my experience is that I just recently wrote a blog post about it. It hasn't been published yet, but it's based on my experience. Again, based on talking to this advisor in Chicago, he remembers me as somebody who took time out of his day to help. And then, I've written about people in this business, or not in this business, but in my experiences where people were just cruel to me for really no reason. People could say no and when you need help and not help out, and that's fine. But, you have to remember the good people, and you have to remember that, again, it's a relationship-driven business. If you do good, if you help people out, other plan providers out, any help along the way, you get it back. And I think that's something that you really have to realize. And that's why, again, this topic of this podcast is going to be how financial advisors can start to grow their 401k plan book of business. My two cents my advice on how, whether you actually have a book of business or you're an advisor and you just want to start a 401k plan book of business. So these are my points. The first point is what I've always said with business. You got to develop your niche, where you stand out in the marketplace. And, one of my favorite sayings of all time is you can't be everything for everybody. So that means as a 401k plan financial advisor, if you're working on $100 million 401k plans, you're not going to be the guy or gal who's going to work on $1 million 401k plans. It's just, the business doesn't work that way. You either work with larger plans or you work with smaller, medium-sized plans. There are obviously some advisors who work, devote themselves to working with doctors just because of the relationships they have in the business. Some work very well with lawyers. So whatever it is, you have to really identify your place in the marketplace. Where are you going to get your clients? What type of clients are you really looking for? Because, again, you can't be everything for everybody. And what does that mean in terms of the services you're offering? Again, that's going to determine how you stand out in the marketplace. If you're a broker, as of right now, we have no new fiduciary rule that's been knocked out. So as a broker, you can't be a fiduciary unless, of course, your broker-dealer allows you to work in a 321 co-fiduciary setting. There are broker-dealers that allow that. They tend to allow it for their bigger brokers with the larger books of business. But it is possible that a broker-dealer will allow individual brokers to serve in a fiduciary capacity. If you're an RIA, obviously, you got to make a choice. Are you going to offer 338 services? Are you only going to offer 338 services? Are you going to offer a mixture of both? These are the questions that, really you have to answer. You have to determine. I really can't tell you what you should do in this business. You got to determine what's your place in this business, how are you going to act, what are you going to do? So my next bit of advice is attending that 401k conference. You know, that's a little plug here, that 401k conference. The next one will be in Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, home of the Phillies. That's on Friday, November 9th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Our guests are Phillies radio voice Larry Anderson. He's also a former Philly, former Red Sox. If you know any baseball history, the Red Sox got him from Houston Astros in 1990, and they gave a prospect to the Houston Astros. I don't know if you heard of him. His name is Jeff Bagwell. So he's part of one of the larger lopsided deals. Very funny guy. And the other guest is Tommy Lasorda's good friend, the Philly Fanatic. So we got 4 hours of content, lunch, a stadium tour of Citizens Bank Park, which I've done. Great, nice little ballpark. And the tour is really, really nice, just like the one in Wrigley Field. And, you know, you get that for $100. But hold on there. If you sign up before November 2nd, we have an early bird special of $75. So anyway, my two cents, attend that 401k conference. Also attend 401k Recon. You know, the 401k Recon are these local events held at a restaurant. They're free for advisors. I started going to them as a presenter when I first started my own practice. They were a great experience for me to speak in front of 50 advisors. Met a lot of contacts with some of the other sponsors who are speakers. These are great little events. I like them. I always loved the idea of them. It was the brainchild of a North Carolina financial advisor by the name of Ross Marino. And, you know, just like with that 401k conference, 401k Recon is a small local event that's obviously regional. Instead of the national events that you see out there that you could spend thousands of dollars in attendance and, you know, may not be the right fit for you. So Ross developed these 401k Recon events as a way to bring these type of educational events to the local area. You know, they're free for advisors to attend, like I said. They get presentations from some of the larger plan providers out there. But the content's very, very good. You're not getting a commercial. You're getting good presentation. You learn something new. I was proud to be the first ERISA attorney to partake in these. And I think they are a great tool. So if there's one near you, you get a nice little meal. You know, they're not giving you a McDonald's Happy Meal. You get a nice little meal, 5-6 hours of content, and it's a great way. So like I said, that 401k conference, 401k Recon, these are great events, cost-effective. 401k Recon's free. Mine, you know, $75 for Philly up until November the 2nd. And that 401k conference, hopefully there'll be some more. We got some in the plans. You know, it really depends on the plan provider supporting us, which they've done a tremendous job of, as well as getting interest from advisors in attending. And there will be some in 2019, I'm sure of that. My next piece of advice is really your need to surround yourself with smart 401k people. I'm a big Rodney Dangerfield fan ever since Caddyshack. I think he literally stole that movie. If you ever listen to the history of Caddyshack, it was supposed to be a movie about caddies, hence the name Caddyshack. And during the filming of the movie, it was a lot of good ad-libbing. And Rodney Dangerfield, if you ever see when he walks into the movie with Mr. Wang, he literally steals the movie. So I was a big Rodney Dangerfield fan. Another great movie of his was Back to School. In Back to School, Rodney Dangerfield played Thornton Mellon, who was a manufacturer of Big and Tall, or Tall and Fat, or whatever he called the clothing lines. And he had a commercial, and he said, if you want to look thin, surround yourself with fat people. And quite honestly, I always use that line for 401k advisors. And I always say that if you have a limited retirement plan experience, the best way to look smart and people think that you're a 401k expert is to surround yourself with 401k experts. So, you know, as a financial advisor, one way to stand out in the crowd is, again, to find providers that you can surround yourself with and lean on for advice and experience and whatever, you know, support. And the best way to do that is to augment your services by finding a couple TPAs that she can lean on for help. Lean on Arisa Turning. My practice, again. While I have a number of RA firms that pay me on retainer because I do a lot of work for them, I also, you know, pick up the phone, preferably email, actually. And if you have a question, contact me. There's not going to be a bill. It's just my way of paying it forward. Obviously, if there's a need for an Arisa Attorney, you help somebody out. Hopefully, they'll remember you, that you helped them along the right way. But regardless of what type of Arisa Attorney you call or, you know, what types of TPAs you rely on, just make sure that they're knowledgeable and that they could really help your services out. I have a client who, you know, quite honestly, you know, can't afford a full-time Arisa Attorney. There are several RA firms out there that do. They're quite large. But for most RA firms, they can't afford it. So, you know, I think it's a feather in his cap. And I think it's something that he finds as a great tool that when he's at a client, he'll pick up his cell phone, give me a call and ask me for a question, and, you know, I'll give him an answer. And it really makes him look impressive in front of the clients that, you know, he has an Arisa Attorney expert, not on staff, but on call. And so that I really believe that if you don't have you know, requisite experience, you know, the fact of the matter is that a financial advisor, I don't care how experienced you are, you can't be expected to be an Arisa expert. You have enough time on your hands to impart investment advice, investment work, and you don't have time to becoming an Arisa expert on, you know, what are the maximum investing schedules or, you know, how do you run an ADP test. You shouldn't really be expected to do that. And that's why there are other plan providers out there that, you know, again, they're there to help. They want to help. But, of course, as with anything, you can't abuse it. Don't go calling a TPA for studies on, you know, let's say cash balance plans and bringing it to clients and never hiring that TPA. That's annoying. Or just really being, you know, wasteful of people's time. People want to help. But as with anything, don't abuse that help. That's really, really important the way I see it. And of course, as a financial advisor, if you have no experience and you only want to be a 321, it may be a good idea to pair up with a provider who, advisor who will serve in a 338 setting, will help you out, develop a fun lineup. They're the 338, you're the 321. You're going to handle the client directly. They are indirectly helping the client through, you know, developing the fiduciary process. You know, you get a fee, they get a fee, and it's a great way for you to learn the business and eventually learn to be a 338. So you got people like James Holland from Millennium, Granite Group of Advisors. They're a advisory firm in Connecticut that's offering a great 338 service. Obviously, Iron, Mesro, Morningstar. I mean, there are a lot of larger 338 providers out there that are willing to help you out if you don't have the experience and you don't want to be 338, but you need some type of help. My next piece of advice is don't rely on one plan provider. Again, with that saying, you can't be everything for everybody, the same thing goes for TPAs. There are TPAs out there that are very good for the smaller plans. There are TPAs out there that are good for the larger plans. And, of course, there are TPAs that are, you know, maybe not so good on cash balance, maybe not so good on defined benefit plans. So I think it's a good idea, you know, you got to collect good TPAs like you collect baseball cards, you know. You want the star TPAs. Have two or three that you can really rely on that can really help your clients out. It's important that, you know, the retirement plan needs of the clients are met with a plan provider that is the best fit. So, you know, taking a plan, you know, to a larger provider may not make sense when the minimum fees are just way too high. So, you know, it really, you know, to me, it's like got to be like clothing. It's got to be the right fit. So that's why I think it's important that you can't just rely on one TPA. You just can't rely on one auditing firm. You can't rely on one ERISA attorney if you deal with plans from varying sizes. It's great to know a handful of plan providers to rely on. My next point is being very cautious of the producing TPA. Competition is a very competitive environment out there. I always say to an advisor, you know what? You're working with a client. There are 15 to 20 advisors out there that immediately want your seat. So when I talk about producing TPAs, those are third-party administration firms that have their own asset advisory business on the side. I used to have a strong bias against producing TPAs because I used to work for one, and those were the days before fee disclosure. And when you had advisory firms linked with TPAs, if they were one and the same, they would pick out revenue sharing paying funds, and the revenue sharing would determine their fee as a TPA. And I thought that those firms, a lot of times, might have given self-serving advice by pushing revenue sharing paying funds, because the plan sponsors didn't understand how fund expenses should factor into administration expenses. So, many years ago, a plan sponsor was led to believe by, a handful of producing TPAs that a fund lineup full of index funds was not cost effective because it would cost a lot more money, not realizing that revenue sharing paying funds had, higher share expenses. But, with fee disclosure now, it's not something that a producing TPA could really hide the ball. It's out there in the open. It's fully disclosed. However, again, working with a producing TPA, in the end, they are competition in the sense that if they, client does fire you, does the producing TPA take over your job? I worked again with Rich Lorita many years ago. We were a producing TPA, and he would avoid working with clients that were firing the broker that had brought us the business. He was a mensch, as they would say, but not everybody feels that way. So that's why I always say just be a little bit cautious. Just remember they are, competition. They're not going to steal your client. Producing TPAs that steal clients don't have great reputations, and they're going to try to avoid that. So I wouldn't worry about that anymore. So like I said, just be cautious. My next point is the need to develop an IPS, investment policy statement. Investment policy statement is not legally required. However, when dealing with ERISA 404C plans, you have to understand that it's a process in order to get liability protection to plan sponsors for the losses sustained by participants in a participant-directed 401k plan. The idea, again, in my old law firm, I always joke about it. Giving me Morningstar profiles, to plan participants, it wasn't a great idea, as well as, not having advisor on staff. We didn't have an advisor until I got there. For 10 years, they didn't have a financial advisor. They didn't review funds at all. So that's the problem. An IPS is a very good part of the fiduciary process. And as an advisor, you have to manage that for the client, whether you're doing it in a discretionary role if you're a 338 or not, if you're a 321 or if you're a broker. So an IPS is, just like a sugary cereal is part of a nutritional breakfast, an IPS is part of a fundamental and rational fiduciary process, because it really lays out how investments are picked, when they're replaced, what's the process, and it's a great roadmap in order to show the Department of Labor, the courts, if need be, how investments were picked, what was the process, did we follow the process, and I think that that's one of the most important points out there. Having an IPS is great, but if you don't follow it, it's worse than not having an IPS at all. Because when you have a fiduciary process, you put it in place, you have to follow it to a T. If you don't follow it to a T, it might be construed as breaching your fiduciary duty because you just didn't follow the process. That's why plan sponsors, when they have that IPS and you put it in place for them, you got to make sure that you actually fulfill what's out there. But of course, the problem with the IPS is it shouldn't be written in a way where it's, very strict constructionist, constructed, like the, in the Constitution, you have the Justice Scalia strict constructionist and the Justice Brennan, like, slippery slope, elastic document. When it comes to an IPS, I think you should go the Justice Brennan method, where it gives you enough of a leeway in order to make decisions. Because, again, you don't want to have a strict policy that you have a good chance of not following. So if you set in your policy, after one quarter on the yellow list on the FI 360 report, we're going to replace it. And if you don't replace it, that's a breach of your fiduciary process because you had a policy in place and you weren't following it. So that's why I think it's very, very important that you draft it in a very, very loose manner, giving you enough outs in order to make decisions and do what you need to do. They're not brain surgery. They're not like the Magna Carta, the Quran, or the Torah. They're nicely... Nice plan documents, ancillary plan documents. If you need samples, you could always contact me. Mutual fund companies are giving it away. I think FI 360 has samples. If you go find online, Google it, you can find a sample IPS that'll pretty much work out for you. My next piece of advice, providing education to plan participants. Like I said, as part of the process, again, I was working for that semi-prestigious law firm. HR director gave me Morningstar profiles and said, good luck to me. That doesn't work. You need to give, under ERISA 404C, enough information for plan participants to make informed investment decisions. And to me, that means, at the very least, investment education. You got to let the plan participants understand what a fixed income fund is, what an equity fund is, what a mid-cap fund is, all that kind of jazz. And you can do that by giving them investment education. You can always give them advice, and I think that I think the way the business is going, more and more plans are going to offer it, and eventually that might be a requirement later down the line that you have to give specific investment advice to plan participants. But until that time, just make sure that you at least provide education to them, because if you provide enough education, you follow the fiduciary process. You're giving the plan sponsor enough protection on the risk of 404C in case participants lose their money through plan investments. And that's your job. Anybody can pick investments. When you have 7,000 mutual funds, anybody with a basic understanding of the markets could probably fill out a pretty decent investment lineup. But as an advisor, your job is to protect your plan sponsor client and limit their liability. And when you provide education to them and then you help them manage the process, you've done your job. My next piece of advice is the need to find the right prospecting benchmarking tools. And like with anything, that's something that's really been out there in the marketplace. There's so many companies offering very, very good services out there. It could be Brightscope, Fiduciary Benchmarks, Judy Diamond, Larkspur, Plan Tools, FI 360, Plan Grader. If I missed anybody, I apologize, but I don't know everybody in the business. But to me, people ask me all the time, what is the right prospecting and benchmarking tool? And quite honestly, to me, it's like buying a putter for golf. It's all about feel. Whatever you feel comfortable with, that's the benchmarking tool that you should use. So, my two cents, see what's out there. See what you think is something that is easy to use for you, is the right fit for you, and then use it. Because, again, I'm not one to push a specific toolkit out there. There's enough out there for you to, measure and see what's out there and see what is the best fit for you. My last piece of advice is probably why you're reading this article. You know, why you're listening to this podcast based on this article that I wrote, and it's really harnessing the power of social media. I always say that the biggest mistake I ever made when I started my own law practice was I hired a public relations specialist to help me with my law firm. And one of the funniest stories is that this PR guy, nice fellow, I actually hired him when I was the associate at that semi-prestigious law firm. I was taking $750 out of my pocket every month and paying him to get me in these newspapers and whatever, because we had a marketing department at my law firm. Great people. They knocked out some great articles I wrote. But unfortunately, when you have two people and 60 attorneys, you can't get as much exposure to them. You can't get as much help. They did a lot of work for events that they were having, and they had this law firm advisor, a law firm administrator who worked. He was the, I used to call him the managing attorney's man Friday. He was supposed to be the guy running the law firm. I don't know what he did. He was very, very good at stabbing people in the back, doing these crazy emails. And I think every law firm partner and every associate couldn't stand him. And what he would do is he would write articles about law firm administration. He didn't ever practice what he wrote, but he put out these articles, and he used the marketing department to do that. And I thought that was the same thing as if a law firm partner asked the marketing department to put out stuff for his son's, you know, football league, because I think that's a abuse of resources, because quite honestly, law firm administration wasn't one of our areas of practice. His articles didn't draw a dime of business, and he continued to write these. And when I was in my own law firm, I used to joke about it. And after I started joking about it, he read that I was making fun of him, and he never wrote another article ever again. He eventually went to another law firm, but at least, you know, I cleaned up the time for the law firm in terms of, the marketing department. I got a lot of work off their backs. But anyway, I wrote these articles for the law firm, but we had a advertising committee that would not let me go onto social media. They saw social media as advertising that had to abide by the New York lawyer advertising rules. And, you know, social media really isn't, it is advertising, but it really isn't. Advertising to me always is, hire me, I'm Ari Rosenbaum, the world's greatest ERISA attorney. I can fix all your stuff, whatever. And when it comes to social media, if you look at my articles, yeah, maybe I'll make a joke about how you could, you know, cough about a reasonable ERISA attorney who charges, you know, flat fees and all that stuff. But most of my material is advice to plan sponsors and plan providers. But it gets out there thanks to LinkedIn. And the power of social media, I was able to build my practice. And it started, that really started when, you know, I had this PR guy. He got me in these newspapers, Long Island Business News and the Pittsburgh News Gazette or whatever the local paper there is called. And, you know, it wasn't helping me draw a dime of business. So when there was a slow time, I asked him, you know, what can I do? And he said, you know, you should take some time off. And, you know, quite honestly, when you're a PR guy and you're telling somebody who just started their practice they should take time off, they're going to fire you. That's what I did. So instead, I picked up a book. It's called The New Rules of Marketing PR, How to Use Social Media, Blogs, New Releases, Online Video, and Viral Marketing to Reach Buyers Directly. It's written by the guy by the name of David Meerman Scott. Next to The Fountainhead, I think that's the one book that changed my life. It realized that the articles were the way to go. And around that time, I met Mike Alford from Brightscope, formerly Brightscope. I met him. He was at a conference. He invited me to talk to me. And he imparted with some great advice. He says, you know how we built Brightscope? We went on LinkedIn, partook in the discussion groups, and we were able to build our brand. And so I took that advice, and, you know, here I am today. And, you know, using LinkedIn, Twitter, JD Supra, blogging, posting a lot of good articles out there, a lot of good content, it's a good way to build your brand, build your standing in the industry, and lets you stand out. As long as you write interesting content, you know, and it looks good. If you print out an article and it looks like it was printed on a dot matrix computer, that, you know, that really isn't going to help you. But if you put good content out there, you develop relationships based on that content, it's going to go a long way to help grow your business. And, you know, as with anything, with all these different little tidbits of information and these lessons, you know, you need to know that building any type of business, you know, it isn't easy. It's always going to take time. If you're dedicated to your clients and you're dedicated to being a 401k advisor, you will succeed as long as you show a value to the services you provide. So, you know, this is a great way, and like I said, great little tidbits that I've seen over the last 20 years that could really help you grow your business. So if you have any questions, comments, or whatnot, obviously feel free emailing me, Ari@therosenbaumlawfirm.com. Phone number, 516-594-1557. Email is probably better. But thank you for listening. And like I said, next episode, we're going to have my good friend, Dan Venturi from Brightworks. And we'll see you then.
Wake up, kid. It's 5:30. You think nothing really changing but the date. You a grand slammer, but you know, Babe Ruth. You got to learn how to relate. I may be swinging from the pearly gate. I got all the answers. Lo and behold, you got the right key, baby, but the wrong key. Ho, yo. One more.